Inkop pridenes nazaj, pa te samo stavimo in tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa trebaha, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa premata, pa ne ideš. Pa tam dol zagledam, zagledam ma doma eno žo.
Ris.
Je bil pa lep, mlad, mlad in to je siv. Siv, ne ta nemški očaj, ne, črni pa to ne. Prav tista prava volk. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiu Študent.
Pozdravljeni poslušalke in poslušalci v današnjem Zeitgeistu. Z vami sem, tako kot prejšnji teden, Matej, le da bom oddajo tokrat vodil sam. V njej bomo ponovno pogledali oziroma se bomo ukvarjali s temami povezanimi z naravo, le da tokrat ne bodo v spredju zgolj rastline, tako kot prejšnji teden, ampak predvsem živali. Glavna tema tokrat je torej v zadnjih letih zelo razširjena in seveda problematična praksa divjega lova na nosoroge. To poganja v bistvu predvsem bizarno visoko povpraševanje po rogovih teh živali med družbeno elito jugovzhodne Azije, pri tem pa v prvi vrsti prednjači Vietnam. Pri višjih slojih te države je namreč zelo razširjeno prepričanje, da je napitek z dodatkom nosorogovih rogov odlično sredstvo za zdravljenje alkoholnega mačka. Nekateri pa verjamejo celo, da se s tem napitkom lahko ozdravi raka. Tovrstnih ne bilo seveda, na tem mestu ne bomo posebej komentirali, ker se nam niti ne zdi potrebno. No, tretja lastnost nosorogovih rogov pa je njihov prestiž, ki jih povzdiguje v nekakšno luksuzno dobrino. In zdaj zaradi teh že nekako srednjeveško alkimističnih prepričanj so Vietnamci že lansko leto iztrebili vse nosoroge na svojih tleh. In ker se popraševanje, domače popraševanje še vedno ni ustavilo, je hitro postalo aktualno novo tržišče za uvoz, to pa je postala Južna Afrika. Tam je bilo tako leta 2010 ubitih 333 nosorogov, predvsem seveda zaradi divjega lova, lani pa že skoraj 450. Ta številka se še naprej povečuje. Med žrtvami pa je tudi kar precej predstavnikov kritično ogrožene vrste črnega nosoroga, katerega število v naravi je manjše od 5000 predstavnikov in seveda že na meji, na meji preživetje vrste, če lahko temu tako rečemo. Vidimo torej, kako se to plenilsko izživljanje nad nosorogi zaradi nekakšnih luksuznih kapric, kako lahko to vodi v ogroženost oziroma v ogroženost redkih vrst. Pri tem pa se je proti organiziranim skupinam divih lovcev, ki masno služijo s prodajo rogov, dejansko zelo težko boriti, saj je stalno nadziranje prostranih območij z omejenimi sredstvi tudi praktično nemogoče. Problem divjega lova na nosoroge tako v tej oddaji postavljamo v širši kontekst izkoriščanja afriških naravnih bogastev, njihove faune in flore, ki precej asocira na nekakšen moderni kolonializem. Tako smo se pogovarjali z Richardom Thomasom, predstavnikom mednarodne mreže za nadzor nad trgovanjem z divjimi živalmi in naravnimi resursi oziroma kratica te organizacije Traffic. Organizacija si prizadeva predvsem, da trgovanje z naravnimi bogatstvi ne bi ogrozilo naravnega okolja. Več o sami organizaciji, njenem delovanju in najbolj aktualnih problemih, tudi torej, o omenjenem divjem lovu na nosoroge in pa ilegalni trgovini s slonovimi okli, pa nam je kot rečeno povedal Richard Thomas in kar prisluhnimo intervjuju z njim.
We're a non-governmental organization that has offices worldwide, but we monitor all aspects of the international wildlife trade. So for example, we're very much involved in tracking the movement of ivory that's occurring illegally, mainly going from Africa towards Asia, but we also look at all the other items and commodities that are traded that are from wild sources. So this ranges from everything from forestry, timber, which is by far and away the largest commodity in terms of value and volume that's shipped worldwide, through to fisheries, through to any other items such as pangolins or tigers or other animals, and even wild plants that are shipped and traded worldwide. But we don't just look purely at illegal trade, we also look at the trade that is carried out legally, and our mission is to ensure that the legal trade is carried out at such levels that it doesn't pose a conservation threat to any of the species that are being traded. That is, it's being carried out sustainably.
Current controversial issues are certainly including rhinos poaching for their horns. These activities, which are seriously threatening rhinos' extinction, are mainly driven by highly unusual demand for these horns by Southeast Asian elites, especially in Vietnam. Can you explain these strange practices with rhinos' horns and its consequences on this species?
Yes, well, we've seen in recent years a massive demand for rhino horns, particularly from Vietnam, and this is for a number of reasons. It's a new demand that's created by new beliefs about the supposed medicinal properties of rhino horn, and included amongst them are a mistaken belief that it can cure cancer. But also there is a large, or appears to be a large number of people who believe it can cure something as mundane as a hangover from drinking too much alcohol. They believe that taking some rhino horn will help do away with the bad headache. This has no medical basis, but it has led to a massive demand for rhino horn, which has resulted or one in Vietnam losing its last rhino that was poached in 2010. But it also means that the rhino horn is being sourced from southern Africa, and in particular South Africa, which has the majority of the world's rhino populations. And there we're seeing an escalation in the poaching of these animals. So in 2007, there was a couple of dozen animals poached, but this figure rose steadily, such that last year almost 450 were killed illegally in South Africa, and already this year we're approaching 300 animals that have been poached.
What countries are we talking about, and what numbers of rhinos, threatened rhinos, that remain in nature?
Well, worldwide, the vast majority of rhinos that live are in Africa, and of those, the majority are in southern Africa. Now, we're talking about two species in South Africa, the white rhino, which has just over 18,000 animals, and the black rhino, that has a population near 4,000. Now, the majority of rhinos that are being poached are the white rhinos, and this is partly because they're a commoner species, but also because they behave differently to black rhinos. So they tend to feed out and graze on grasses, and they tend to be out in the open more, and also occur in small groups. And this makes them a target for poachers. The black rhino browses on bushes, and so they're a lot harder to locate, and they also tend to be solitary, so they're far less targeted.
So these poachers are only after rhino's horns. So what, they cut them off and leave the animals badly damaged, or they kill them and...
Well, as you say, the poachers are purely after the horn, and that's all they're interested in. And so they will just remove the horn in the most rapid way possible. So we've had instances of animals on some occasions being shot and killed and the horn removed quickly. But in other cases, veterinary drugs have been injected into the rhinos, so they fall asleep, and then the horn is removed with an axe or a chainsaw, and then the animal is just left. And on some occasions, these animals have survived the attack, and they've been left severely disfigured and scarred with the whole of the front of their head, or where the horn was, just chainsawed away. Quite horrific injuries.
The wildlife trade between Africa and Asia is currently one of the main hotspots, if you can say so, in today's international trade. Could you tell us something about the nature of this business relations with wildlife animals and their commodities?
Sure. Well, we're seeing a couple of factors here. One is that Asia as a whole is becoming generally a more wealthy place, so a lot more people there have disposable income that they spend on goods, luxury items, some of which are wildlife goods. So, for example, that's helped fuel the demand in ivory. But another major factor is the number of Asian nationals now visiting or going to live in Africa. So, for example, we have more than 1 million Chinese nationals are now based in Africa, and demand for products back home means that they may become involved in helping ship those goods back home. And some of that trade is legal, but an awful lot of it is illegal.
Which are other world hotspots, and what are their distinctive characteristics, for example?
Well, the major markets for wildlife goods are in North America and in Europe. And the European Union, for example, imports large numbers. I mean, it's a huge consumer of timber, which, as I mentioned earlier, is by far and away the major commodity that is traded internationally. And again, there are issues there with looking at the legality of the source of that timber. So it's important to understand that wildlife trade is an absolute global phenomenon, that every country in the world is trading in wildlife goods in some way.
How is your organization pushing for regulatory solutions with states and governments that would prevent excessive exploitation of wildlife resources?
Well, Traffic works closely both with national governments. So when there's, for example, loopholes in legislation or weaknesses in legislation, we will advise them of that and work with them on the best ways to address those sort of issues. But we also work very closely with CITES, that's the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. And this is an international convention that has been signed and ratified by more than 170 governments worldwide. And it imposes regulations that are intended to ensure that any trade that is permitted is carried out sustainably.
What about your efforts for preservation of the extinct species?
Well, where animals are extremely endangered and at threat of extinction, then normally through CITES, the species will be listed in a special category that means they can only be moved or traded under very exceptional circumstances, for example, for scientific study or for zoo breeding purposes or something. And we, of course, would support the efforts to make sure that very threatened species aren't traded such that it could put them at risk of complete extinction.
One of the big issues is also problematic trade with ivory from Africa. Some countries are reportedly moving in positive direction with regard to preventing these practices. And how would you describe current situation on tackling illegal ivory trade?
Well, we're at a bit of a crisis point in terms of ivory trade at the moment because it is at record levels. And 2011 was the worst year on record for the number of large-scale ivory seizures, and reflected in that is the rise in elephant poaching, such that that is also at record levels. Now, there's a number of measures that need to be taken to address this. One is we need much better enforcement by governments, both at the supply end of the trade chain, so in the African countries where the elephants are being illegally killed and the ivory taken. We also need better controls at the ports where it's leaving Africa, the airports and the seaports where ivory is being smuggled out of Africa. And we also need better enforcement at the countries that are being used as transit points along the shipping or air routes, and also in the destination ports and seaports in Asia, where by and large most of this ivory is heading. So we need better enforcement. In some cases we need better laws. So for example in Thailand there is a loophole in the legislation that permits domestic ivory to be sold legally within the country, and that creates a loophole for illegal African ivory to be laundered into that market. We also need much better regulation in the markets where this ivory is being sold. So, for example, in Thailand, you can readily find ivory on sale in the major cities there, and this is being sold to tourists who will often will take it back home with them, but it's sold illegally. There's also a major domestic ivory market in China where ivory is being sold. So we need action against these domestic ivory markets. But ultimately, to stop or at least significantly reduce the poaching of elephants and the smuggling of ivory, we need to reduce the demand for the product. And this is going to be a long-term solution, but we need governments in Asia in particular to run major public awareness campaigns to let their citizens know that it's illegal to buy and trade in ivory and the consequences it has on the ground for the elephants and the environment and those that get caught up in the criminal gangs that are smuggling this ivory from Africa to Asia.
Most of the world's illegal wildlife trade is originating or is coming from Africa. How is this connected with the socio-economic factors such as poverty and inequality?
Well, many countries in Africa are underdeveloped and relatively poor, and of course there's a temptation there to sell their wildlife goods to generate income. So it's a natural, it's understandable why it's happening, but it has, in the long term, very negative consequences for the overall health of the environment. So for example, if there's no wildlife, it will mean that ecotourism, for example, won't be developed to create a sustainable income for the country. And it's depleting some of these African countries of their natural wealth.
What is the current public scandal with Spanish King reflecting in this efforts for wildlife preservation and everything that is going on around it? We all know about this case. Is it very damaging for public awareness campaigns on wildlife preservation?
Well, it's it certainly raised the whole issue of trophy hunting, but it's also raised the awareness of the scale of elephant poaching that is going on in Africa. And obviously any illegal killing of elephants is extremely of extreme concern and very worrying, and it's only by gaining high-level political support and will to tackle the illegal killing that's going on that we'll be able to generate the momentum to address the ongoing crisis.
Poslušali smo torej intervju z Richardom Thomasom, predstavnikom mednarodne mreže za nadzor trgovanja z naravnimi bogatstvi in divjimi živalmi, skrajšano traffic. S problematiko mednarodne trgovine, predvsem tiste ilegalne, z naravnimi resursi sem se ukvarjal Matej. Upam, da je bila tema tudi za vas poslušalce razumljivo predstavljena. Na tej točki se od vas tudi poslavljam in vam želim samo še lep večer. Čau.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, ne pa te samo stan, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa treba, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa prema vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna in ošla.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in to je siv, ne ta nemški očaj, ne, črni pa to ne, prav tista prava volna, ne, krasna.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa, na Radiju Študent.